armor fashioned in part from the skull of a huge predator that he himself had slain, and over each shoulder had also been set a massive curved tusk. The last was in homage to his father, Grom, for they were those of the Pit Lord Manaroth, the great demon his sire had slain. By killing Manaroth, Grom had freed his people from the fiend's blood curse, which had made them servants of the monstrous Burning Legion. Tearing open the small pouch with ease, he read the message. A single, satisfied grunt was his only initial reaction. "The spirits have guided us. We were where we needed to be to catch this prey." He crammed the parchment into a pouch at his belt. "Destiny is with us. All falls into place. The Night Elves react exactly as I said they would." "Garrosh Hellscream knows all," declared the orc who had handed him the pouch. "He guides his enemies to their doom and laughs at their feeble attempts to keep their necks from his mighty axe, Gorehowl." "Gorehowl will taste much Night Elf blood soon. The Horde's glory is eternal," Garrosh replied, his tone filled with rising anticipation. "This is our land now." He looked around. "So much timber. So much untouched ore. The Alliance was foolish not to use its bounty. We will build a city here to rival even Orgrimmar." The other orcs gave a lusty though low cheer. Although in the wilderness they could still not trust that there might not be others who would hear them. None of the orcs feared battle. But this mission was of the greatest import to the plan, or else the war chief himself would not have chosen to lead it. The courier had been an exception. The scout who had spotted her in the distance had suspected from her route and pace that she surely carried something of importance, and had reported the sighting immediately. Garrosh had not hesitated for a moment before ordering his archers to bring down the hippogriff. "I have seen all I need. We return now. The ships will soon arrive." He grinned, already envisioning the carnage their contents would create. "My gift to the Alliance must be readied." The rest of the band let loose with another low cheer. Garrosh pulled free Gorehowl and briefly waved it. The unsettling keening arose once more, then quieted as the warchief lowered his axe. Gripping the weapon in both hands, he then led his followers east. Behind them, Aradria stirred, let out a brief moan, then grew still once more. Chapter 5. Bitter Reunions. True to her promise, the High Priestess arranged matters for Jarrod Shadowsong. Shalasir lay at rest in the temple in an area reserved for such sad tableau, her body now garbed in the raiment of the Sisterhood. She had been placed on a marble platform with the sign of the goddess, the crescent moon, etched multiple times into each side. The light of Elune shone down upon her, and her face bore an expression of peace. Those who had known her came to give their respects, each going down on one knee, then murmuring a prayer for her spirit to the Mother Moon. The temple never closed its doors to the faithful, although most of those coming to honor Shalasir came during the evening. However, time meant nothing to Jarrod, who ever leaned over his beloved, either praying to Elune or silently speaking to his mate. The travel cloak lay bunched up to the side, but otherwise he was clad in the same forest green and brown garments in which he had arrived. His beard and hair were slightly unkempt. Such mundane matters were of no interest to him at this time. Generally there were two priestesses in attendance for such occasions, but at the former captain's request, Tyranda had removed them. Although grateful for all that had been done for his mate, Jarrod desired privacy when no other mourners were present. head resting upon his folded hands, he spoke again to Shalasir, this time reminding her of when they had built their first dwelling together. It had been a simple one, designed to give them shelter while they made plans for something more permanent. The mistakes they had made in its creation had done more to bind them together. Gerard looked up, well-honed instincts alerting him to the presence of another. He glanced over his shoulder at the entrance. "My respects for your loss," Chandras quietly said. "The Mother Moon guides her spirit now." The general of the sentinels moved as smoothly as a nightsaber, and Gerard seemed much unchanged physically from when they had last met. She carried her helmet in the crook of her arm, which allowed him to study close her face. As usual, Chandras's true emotions remained hidden, save for a brief flash of what he read as either anger or uncertainty. Chandras had been adopted by Tyrande, but they looked enough alike in the face to have passed for true mother and child. However, the High Priestess had a softness to her expression that Gerard had seldom seen on Chandras. The general was also clad very true to her nature, her sleek violet armor covering most of her form. The armor had been designed as much for swift movement as protection. Even the shoulder guards were set so that Chandras could raise a bow or sword at a moment's notice without any hindrance. The helmet, which only covered the upper half of the face, had also been forged with those two thoughts in mind. It could be easily set atop or pulled off of the head without ever catching on the long, tapering ears of a night elf, or, in Chandras's case, tangling with her long, dark blue hair. "Thank you." As she strode toward him, Gerard straightened to better face her. Her somber expression matched well his own. "I recall her," the general continued, looking at the still figure. "She had much merit. She had life. She breathed life. The world brightened wherever she went." Chandras turned more toward the body, in the process her expression becoming hidden from Gerard's view. "You truly loved her?"
"Of course."
"Then I envy her." He gaped. "Chandras." The female night elf looked back at him. Her eyes were moist, but the tears were clearly not entirely for the deceased. "I am sorry. I have been rude. You know that you have my deepest sympathies. To lose her so suddenly after so long, it is not right."
"Chandras."
"I must go," she muttered, looking even more uncomfortable than Gerard felt. He tried to gently take her arm, but Chandras evaded his touch without seeming to try. She could not keep him from following her, though, and thus the two walked in silence out of the chamber. Gerard looked around, saw that no one was near, then quietly said, "I have owed you an apology for a long time."
"You owe me no such thing. Nothing ever truly happened between us."
He looked back at the chamber, his face radiating guilt. Then, "I do not deny I was enchanted by your attention, especially once you had grown up. But we were heading in opposite directions in life. Those years right after the war were hard on all of us. All I wanted was to try to forget the carnage and the deaths. I never wanted to be a leader. A hero." Gerard said the last word with much self-derision. "I felt out of place. Something you did not. You had purpose. You had your duty to the temple and the High Priestess."
"She has..."
Gerard held up a hand for silence, and clearly to his surprise, Chandras obeyed. "That you would be devoted to Tyrande not only for saving your life, but for becoming the mother you lost, is hardly something with which I would find fault. Yet she, and through her our people, have been, and always will be, your foremost focus." Chandras opened her mouth, then shut it. There was no denial in her eyes. Instead, she leaned up and suddenly kissed him on the cheek. There was not even the mildest attempt at seduction. This was a token of sympathy for his plight.
"I am here, if you need to talk," the general said.
With that, she turned and departed. Chandris did not look back, and Gerard did not say farewell. He only watched as she headed in the direction that he knew the High Priestess's sanctum lay. The former officer started back, only to notice another armored figure far off in the opposite direction.
"Mother Moon,"
Gerard whispered, thinking that he recognized the other, despite the helmet. He waved to her. Yet, unlike Chandris, the newcomer, once noticed, did not approach. Rather, she turned to leave.
"Maiev!"
If she heard him, she did not respond. He stood there for a moment, completely perplexed, then rushed after his sister. She had gone around a corner before he had managed half the distance. Certain that he would lose her and not sure when they would meet next, Gerard ran. He cut around the corner only to see his quarry vanish out of the temple. Following suit, Gerard exited onto the long bridge leading to the gardens. By that time, Maiev, if it was her, was already across the bridge and well into the area. He rushed through the gardens after her. Then beyond them, he twisted east as the ever-half-glimpsed figure of his sister moved swiftly through the city and beyond the boundaries of Darnassus into the forest. Gerard was not far behind, but still too far for his tastes. As he entered among the trees, he wondered if this would all prove a futile chase. Still, he was determined to follow. Gerard darted among the first trees, trying to estimate the right path. He caught one glimpse of what he thought was an arm just noticeable between the tree trunks to his right and immediately veered toward it. Although he had no knowledge of this forest, Gerard allowed his natural instincts to guide him. He made swift judgments about the most accessible routes and where, from what he could make out of the landscape ahead, Maiev would likely head. Although he could not see her, he was certain that he was at last closing on her. A sudden rush of intense satisfaction at this vied with his guilt for having left Shalasir's side. He was not going to let Maiev get the best of— A muzzle full of long, sharp teeth confronted him. The image that filled Gerard's view over the next few seconds was one of nightmare. He saw something lupine, yet roughly humanoid in shape. It was at least as tall as he was, but nearly twice as wide and far more muscled. Long, deadly claws flashed by his face but did not touch him. The eyes. The eyes were those of no beast. A powerful fist thrust against Gerard's chest, shoving the air from his lungs. The night elf bent over as he struggled for breath. In the back of his mind, he waited for the killing strike by either claw or bite. But the strike did not come, and when Gerard managed to lift his head enough to see before him, it was to discover that he was again alone. The only hint that anything had stood before him was the already slowing shift of branches. Gerard darted after the unseen creature. He ducked around another tree, and then nearly ran into his sister, Maiev, who suddenly stood right in front of him. She had removed her helmet, revealing deep scars across her face that startled Gerard as much as her sudden presence in front of him.
"Never go chasing someone alone in unfamiliar territory.
I thought that was one of the first things I taught you." Gerard looked down to see the point of her umbra crescent touching his chest. He had noted the weapon at her side when he first spotted her, but had never expected to have it wielded against him. Chuckling at his discomfort, Maiev withdrew the weapon. In one smooth movement, she hooked it at her side again.
"I thought that, of all people, I could trust in my sister."
"Perhaps more than a scorned love," she returned.
"That was General Chandris Feathermoon I saw retreating in defeat in the temple, was it not?"
"Maiev.
She was quite in a shambles when you vanished so long ago."
"Enough, Maiev.
His joy at reuniting with his sister quickly became tempered by her comments about Chandris. Still, he tried to regain his initial enthusiasm. After all, it had been so long. "It is so good to see you again. I wondered if we might meet when I returned here. I had hoped so."
"Why?"
Her question put him off balance. "You are my sister. My only flesh and blood. We have not seen each other in millennia."
"And whose fault is that?"
she snapped without warning. "Maiev?" Suddenly, Gerard faced a person whose expression was filled with anger, with bitterness. This was not the reunion for which he had hoped. Maiev shook her head at his obvious naivete.
"Did you think I would forget, even after all this time? You shamed us. You were one of the leaders of our people. I was quite proud of you then. My little brother, commander of the Night Elf host. I watched you grow during the war, taking over after the death of that aristocratic imbecile Star-Eye, and proving to everyone that the name Shadowsong should be respected by all."
"You do not understand."
"You never will, it seems. You apparently never understood duty and loyalty."
She hesitated when she noticed something on his face. Only then did Gerard feel the moistness running down his left cheek and the stinging near his eye. He touched his hand to the moisture, then looked at his fingers. Blood. Gerard could not recall when it had happened, but assumed that it must have been during his encounter with the mysterious creature. Yet he did not remember the beast scratching him there.
"That got dangerously close to your eye,"
his sister commented, with a surprising hint of softness in her tone. She put a finger to the stinging area.
"Did you fall or slip on the path? I remember you being better skilled on the hunt than that."
It only occurred then to Gerard that he had not yet had a chance to tell her about the startling confrontation.
"Maiev, there was something here in the forest with us. Something I have never seen before anywhere. I ran into it just before I caught up with you. It could still be nearby."
Her mockery died away, and Maiev, the warrior, took over.
"Did it do that to you? What did it look like?"
"No. The scratch I must have gotten from a tree branch after I collided with the creature. It did not attack me." Gerard collected his thoughts. "I did not get a good look. It happened so quickly. Something lupine. I think. All I saw were claws, teeth, and a shape not unlike our own, but wider."
"Oh."
Maiev no longer looked interested. "One of them. There is nothing to fear there. They do not dare get on the High Priestess's or Archdruid Malfurion's bad side." He could not believe that what he had seen could be so easily dismissed. "Them? There are more like that, roaming around Darnassus's boundaries."
"Forget it, brother. It fled, did it not? That tells you all you need to know."
"They are cowardly skulkers with no bite. The Worgen are undesirables who could not even save their own home." "What are—" But before Gerard could finish, Maiev had begun to move on. She did not head directly toward Darnassus, but rather took a path that would make her skirt the east side of the capital. Gerard had to rush to keep up.
"Do as I say, and forget them," she repeated. "Besides, it is certainly not your duty to police the capital. You gave up any sense of duty millennia ago."
The barb hit true. Gerard grimaced, but sought to defend himself. "Maiev, I gave our people centuries of dedication to duty, of devotion to—"
"Centuries of dedication?"
She laughed in his face.
"That is nothing. Gerard, I have remained true to my duties as a protector of the Night Elf race from the moment I became a priestess of Alun, and afterward as a watcher, until even now.
I volunteered to oversee the imprisonment of Illidan Stormrage, even though that meant my fate was locked for millennia with his. I pursued him when other misfortunes enabled his escape. I survived torture as his prisoner, and finally had the chance to do what should have been done in the very beginning. Slay the Archdruid's accursed twin. Maiev. She waved off the hand he reached to her. Spare me any sympathy. I chose duty where you did not. Sometimes that has meant that I have made decisions that to others were not always evident as the right ones until much later. But I regret none of them. I understand. You have ever been determined to do what was best for all, regardless of how it made you look at times. I have always admired that steadfastness in you. The muscles in his sister's face grew a little less taut. A hint of weariness touched her gaze. I do what I must do. This time he would not brook her blocking his hand. He put a hand on her shoulder and wished that the armor would not prevent him from gently squeezing Maiev there. I have missed you. Of all those I left behind, I missed you the most. The general would not enjoy hearing that. Do not joke with me about that. Not now. She patted him on the arm. My mistake. You have had a terrible loss. I recall Shalasir. Well skilled in the martial arts training of the Sisterhood. She would have made a good watcher. He grew uncomfortable. I need to return. I am sorry, Maiev. Later, yes. Later we will talk more. Be off with you. My condolences. Gerard hesitated, then turned. However, a nagging guilt at leaving matters so unfinished made him almost immediately look back. Maiev was gone. The former guard officer nearly called out, then hesitated. Brow furrowed, he eyed where his sister had stood, then resumed his journey back to Darnassus and his Shalasir. In another part of the forest near Darnassus, others had gathered. They were clad much more elegantly than other night elves and bore about them an inherent air of superiority. Their sleek robes were flamboyant and brilliantly colored. Although clearly night elves, these were the highborn, the highest caste of old night elf nobility. However, due to their continued use of arcane magic, they had been shunned by their brethren following the War of the Ancients. Once there had been many more of them, but some had fallen serving their arrogant and evil queen Azhara, while others had been later transformed in other manners, turned into the reptilian, sea-dwelling fiends called Naga. Refugees from Eldrathalus, better known to most in this age by the more apt title Dire Maul, these Night Elf Magi and their fellow survivors remained shunned by many of those in Darnassus. Though the Highborn even now maintained an air of absolute independence, in truth they found themselves in need of others. However, that by no means meant any lacking in arrogance or in their desire to continue their study of the arcane, no matter what the cost. There were 20 at this gathering, 20 of the strongest. Varden Skyseeker was leader of the 20 and had aspirations to be much more. The eventual successor to the Highborn's speaker, Archmage Mordant Evenshade. Varden now guided the spell that the 20 cast, a test of their power. The swirling energies gathered within the circle the casters formed. The faces of each male and female in the group glowed from not only the radiance, but also his or her deep enthrallment. Varden gestured, and the energies came together in one powerful yet compact sphere. He gestured again, and tendrils reached out in the four directions of the compass. "We are now ready," he told the others through the link that their spellwork created. As one, the Highborn drew a sign in the air. The tendrils grew stronger, and more erupted from the sphere. The sphere itself pulsated rapidly. A horrific wind tore through the region. Highborn cried out in surprise as they were buffeted. The circle broke, but Varden kept the link solid. They had come this far with their efforts. He was not about to let them all fail. Then, what at first some mistook for thunder roiled through the area. Varden looked up, but there were no clouds. He stared at the treetops, which shook violently, more violently than the wind demanded. It was they, in fact, that were the source of the deafening roar. "Keep to your efforts," Varden snapped at some of his companions, the clearly unnatural actions of the forest finally unnerving them enough to cause risk to the spell. He led the way, concentrating harder and trying to draw the others back into the effort. A tremendous wrenching drowned out the roar. One of the nearest trees bent down. Its limbs now acted like so many tentacles from some kraken. They reached for those highborn below them. More wrenching arose from beyond the boundaries of the gathering. Everywhere the closest trees stretched their branches toward the spellcasters. The link weakened beyond Varden's will to keep it intact. The gathered energies faded, and the tendrils dissipated. The sphere shrank, and then melted away with a pitiful hiss. As it vanished, many of the exhausted highborn slumped to the ground. Varden remained standing, although it was secretly an effort to do so. Gritting his teeth, he searched the forest for the cause of the disaster. "I made matters very clear regarding the practice of your arcane arts," boomed a voice from every direction. "This goes against everything upon which the Archmage and I agreed." One of the other spellcasters thrust a finger toward Varden's left. There the branches and underbrush gave way of their own accord to open a path to a lone figure wielding only a staff. Archdruid. Varden did not bow to Malfurion Stormrage, though he did nod his head in respect. "I have petitioned over and over about some mild changes in our agreement, but received no suitable answer. We need more leeway in our efforts. Our powers will stagnate if we cannot utilize them in a sufficient manner." Malfurion strode up to Varden, then raised the staff slightly. Varden wisely quieted. "Your petition is still under consideration by both Mordant and me, as you have been informed more than once, and there has been no answer on it for reasons you have already been told. The reputation of the Highborn will always be stained by their past. As the Archmage's Theroshan, you should understand that. You Highborn chose to stay in Eldrathalus, defending and hiding in your special city as the war bloodily played out elsewhere. We fought for our home. You stood by while the Queen's counselor Xavius oversaw the creation of the portal that let the Legion into our world. You stood silent when Queen Azhara chose the demons over her own people, and you continue your practice of arcane magic, even though it is the same magic that drew the Legion to us. Even the millennia have not stripped the people's memories of those final days. It was difficult enough even to gain your kind the right to come to Darnassus. We came here thanks to your promises, Archdruid. We came here with the assurance that we were to be a part of Night Elf society again, yet also with the understanding that we will maintain our own identity too. However, as you yourself so eagerly point out, we are still ostracized. We must be able to openly practice our arts. Otherwise, that alone proves your promises, and those of the High Priestesses amount to nothing." The Archdruid stepped closer, only pausing when he and Varden were within reach of one another. Malfurion's gold eyes gleamed sharply. Some of the Highborn's arrogance faltered. There is every intention of the Highborn becoming a part of our society again, but such things cannot and will not happen overnight, Malfurion quietly but sternly replied. This is a process that will have to play out over time, perhaps years. Patience is a virtue we must all nurture, Varden. If we can, we will succeed. Mordant understands that. Varden did not look convinced, but nodded. Malfurion turned to the rest of the assembled Highborn. Go back to the others and tell them what I said, and tell them that the High Priestess Tyranda and I keep our promises. The other spellcasters wasted no time in beginning their retreat. Even the Highborn greatly respected the power of the legendary Archdruid. Only Varden remained behind. I mean no disrespect, Archdruid. I am simply seeking the best for my own. Mordant and I are aware of what you seek. With that, Malfurion returned to the forest, not once looking back or speaking to Varden. The mage eyed the Archdruid's receding form, not stirring until Malfurion was long gone. A scowl spread across Varden's handsome face. We will be patient. To a point, he muttered. Only to a point. Still scowling, the Highborn followed after his companions. Caught up in his fury, he ignored his surroundings. To his kind, trees were just trees, the forest merely a gathering of trees. The undergrowth through which he pushed was only overgrown weeds that, if not for his hosts, he would have raised instantly in order to clear a proper path. The Highborn lived for their arcane arts. They were used to having the environment bow to them, not the other way around, as it was with those who had built Darnassus. Like many Highborn, Varden respected only power. The Archdruid and the High Priestess were powerful, thus Varden bowed to them. The rest of Darnassus, however. The mage's foot shoved against something that momentarily caused him to stumble. Well used to the disorganized manner of the forest, Varden kicked at the object without looking, then continued on through the underbrush. He had led his band out to this location due to its supposed remoteness, but otherwise had only contempt for it. He looked forward to returning to the relatively civilized settlement the Highborn had set up. And so the hand that Varden had kicked, the hand of the dead Highborn who had been but recently one of his band, lay with its owner, for the time undiscovered. Chapter 6. Storm at Sea. The storm struck suddenly, battering the 10 great ships mere days from port. It quickly became one of the worst storms the orc captain could ever recall. Thunder crashed and lightning continuously lit up the sky. The rain came down in torrents and the sea rocked. Brilne roared orders to the crew, trying to keep the flagship under control. If it looked as if he could not maintain command during the storm, then the entire fleet risked slipping into chaos as other captains turned to their own initiative. With the cargo they were carrying, such a choice would spell even greater disaster. The ship leapt into the air as another huge wave rolled by. Brilne gripped the rail as the vessel came down hard. Those who had never sailed the seas could not appreciate just how much like stone water could feel at such times. The entire ship shook, and the hull creaked ominously. A scream from above made the fleet captain force his gaze into the downpour. He looked just in time to see one of the mariners who had been working on some of the snarled rigging fall into the sea. Brilne grunted but did not call for a rescue. In this storm, the hapless mariner was already dead. The York officer was more interested in getting the rest of his crew and his ship, all the ships, to safety. Brilne had sworn an oath to the war chief that he was capable of fulfilling this mission. A shout from one of the crew made the captain turn. The other orc pointed frantically toward one of the trailing vessels. Brilne wiped the rain from his good eye and squinted. There was a glow rising from the ship in question. Fire. Such a blaze could have started by lightning, yet this fire already appeared too spread out and was confined to the deck for the most part. Generally, lightning caught the sails, rigging, or masts. Thunder rumbled. Brilne caught up in the distant spectacle, all but ignored it, until it ended not by fading, but rather by being accented by a ferocious and much too near roar. He spun around and ran to the opposing rail. There, crashing through another humongous wave, the second ship in the fleet rocked wildly about in a manner that was contrary to the currents and wind. Something was shaking the ship from within its very hold. The captain took up a spyglass that he always carried on him when aboard. Holding the copper tube, he focused it on the sister vessel, where oil lamps secured to the masts and other strategic areas gave enough illumination to reveal what was happening. The captain of the second ship, a gruff mariner personally promoted by Brilne, had his crew arming themselves with sea lances. Near the aft, three other orcs were lighting torches using oiled rags. Hardy warriors, they nonetheless looked very, very anxious. Brilne swore. He waved the spyglass in an attempt to get the attention of one of those aboard the other ship. No one noticed. The fire spreading over the more distant ship now made more sense. That crew had been trying to do the same as these mariners and had somehow lost control of the situation. Thinking of the previous vessel, Brilne turned the spyglass toward it. To his shock, it was no longer in sight. Such a blaze should have still been evident, unless the ship had already sunk. Cursing, Brilne looked to his first mate.
A signal lamp! Hurry!
But as he gave the order, the flagship shook as if it had struck a hard reef. Brilne fell to the side. The first mate dropped to his knees. Another mariner dropped over the rail and into the voracious sea. Another thump rattled the deck. Brilne struggled to rise.
The storm's woken all of them up. Forget the lamp. Have the sleep powder readied and spread it both on some food and the points of four spears. I want that thing below quieted, or we'll be in as bad a shape as those other vessels.
As the first mate and the others followed his orders, Brilne returned his attention to the sister ship. Matters there were only worse.
Why haven't they quieted the beast? He wondered.
A quick scan of the deck revealed the answer. Blackened wreckage marked the area where the barrel with the herb powder used to keep the beast sedated had been kept secure. Rain by itself could not have touched the tarp-covered container tucked under the overhang of the door to the captain's cabin, but lightning could have, and had. The entire area had been blasted, and with it the only certain way to keep their savage cargo docile. The flagship's own thumping slowed. A desperate notion occurred to Brilne. He raced over to the hold entrance just as the first mate emerged. The other orc looked exhausted, but triumphant.
He was just waking. We caught him in time.
The captain cut him off.
Who's the best shot?
The first mate grinned.
That'd be me, Captain. You know that.
We've got a good amount of the powder left. Can you shoot a couple of sacks over to her?
Brilne gestured at the other ship.
They've lost all their supply. Aye.
Another roar echoed from the direction of the other ship. Brilne brought up the spyglass. The orcs with the torches were racing toward the hold. There several mariners with lances prepared to descend. The deck behind them erupted. A gasp escaped Brilne. He had seen no lightning. What could have? As the shattered planks settled, the answer revealed itself. The silhouette of a huge hand briefly rose above the ruined deck, then sank back down. As that happened, the ship rocked back and forth even more violently. Some of the crew hurried to the hole. As that happened, Brilln's second returned.
Two pouches, the other orc shouted over the storm. Where?
Somewhere on the deck where they'll see them. Just hurry!
Aye.
The first mate bound one tiny sack to an arrow, then readied the ladder for firing. Even in such a storm, a skilled orc archer could be certain of hitting his target more often than not. But before Brilln's second could let loose, the other ship rocked even more wildly. Several of the crew, focused on the hole in the deck, suddenly went stumbling toward the rails. Two fell over, and one only saved himself by grabbing hold at the last moment. The first mate shifted, trying to compensate. With the other orcs being flung this way and that, there was now more of a risk of shooting one of them. The second ship tilted again, nearly falling sideways due to the additional impetus of another wave. As the vessel righted, the archer finally fired. Brilln let out a lusty roar. The arrow landed true about a yard from the gaping hole. One of the crew noticed it and ran to retrieve the pouch. It was clear that he had a fairly good idea what the flagship had just sent over.
Quick! The other!
The captain commanded. One pouch likely had more than enough powder to quiet the beast, but a second would guarantee success. The first mate raised his bow. The side of the hull facing the flagship shattered. A fearsome hoofed leg shot out, then pulled back in. The rough sea turned the damaged ship, bringing the new gap to the water. The sea flooded into the fractured hold.
"Forget the powder!"
Brilln roared. He needed to say no more. Abandoning the effort, the first mate rushed to give the order to heave toward the floundering vessel. A wave briefly righted the ship, but its cargo, obviously growing more enraged, lashed out once more. Planks splintered as the hoof kicked again. The hull nearly doubled in size. When the ship listed this time, there was no doubt of its imminent fate. With water rushing in, the hoard vessel quickly sank. Within moments, the deck was at sea level. Orcs leapt for the churning water, trying to reach the flagship. Several were immediately swept under by the waves and did not resurface. Wild roars escaped the hold. The gargantuan hands ripped away at what remained of the deck. Yet for all the creature's brute strength, he could not climb free in time. The deck sank below the water. The sea shoved the ship farther from the rest of the fleet. One by one, the lanterns were doused, leaving only a silhouette of the ill-fated vessel. A final frustrated roar cut over the storm. The silhouette changed as something seemed to erupt from the sinking ship's deck. Brilln grasped hold of the rail, the rescue attempt for the moment erased from his thoughts as the fear of a new threat to his own ship occurred to him. He envisioned the titanic creature wending his way closer. But with one last huge bubble of escaping air, the floundering ship went completely under. The last plunge happened so swiftly that the beast had no opportunity to react. The flagship drew near two of the survivors. Brilln doubted more than a handful would make it, if even that many. He mourned their brave deaths, then considered what the night's events might mean. He had lost a fifth of his precious cargo.
Eight should do, the captain muttered. Eight should surely do.
But that was up to the war chief. That was up to Garrosh. Brilln hoped for no more losses. Surely if there were no more losses, then Garrosh would forgive him for this failure. But if the war chief did find fault with him, Brilln asked only that the great orc leader let him see the crushing of the Alliance in Ashenvale. That would make the captain's own death worth it all.
There is a change in us, Malfurion noted as he strode through Darnassus, and not one for the better.
The archdruid knew exactly when this undesired shift in the mood of the night elves had happened, and what had caused it. Shialasir. They cannot forget Shialasir. Night elves were used to death in battle or by accident. What they were not used to was the loss of a life due to infirmity tied to aging. Tyranda had spoken with Gerard, and through him learned the extent of Shialasir's troubles. The illness had not been the only trouble, only the final straw. Gerard and his mate had been suffering from a number of minor but increasingly consistent aches and pains that sounded all too familiar to Malfurion, whose shoulder suffered twinges even now. He eyed those nearest his path as he crossed the gardens. A dour atmosphere pervaded them. Malfurion could imagine their thoughts. Each wondered not only if this was the fate awaiting them, but also just how imminent it might be. And he was no better than they were. There was no escaping the inevitable, but through the use of the sisterhood, Tyranda was already trying to stem the rising fear. She also looked to the examples of the younger races, the humans especially, for how to handle the aging and sickness. True, the humans, too, suffered great emotional distress from both, but they also had a resilience that in most cases salvaged them. At the moment, neither the archdruid nor his mate was certain that their own race as a whole would prove as equal to the tests. Malfurion forced the situation from his thoughts. He had to concentrate on the summit. Preparations had at last been finalized, and the arrivals of the representatives were close at hand. Malfurion now had to concern himself with the specifics of what he hoped would be accomplished. Archdruid Malfurion Stormrage. It was next to impossible to come upon the archdruid without his noticing, but the speaker had done just that. Fortunately, Malfurion was not one of tender nerve. He simply turned and, to no surprise, found himself gazing down slightly at a human. The man was in the prime of life, strong of jaw and with narrow eyes. He was clad in loose, simple brown garments. Despite being unarmed, he bore a stance that marked him as a fighter. Malfurion knew him. Edric. Edric bowed low, his long brown-black hair falling forward. My lord Gen Greymane hoped to have a word with you, if you've time this day. The archdruid's brow furrowed. As a matter of fact, Edric, I should speak with him right now. Where is he? The human straightened. I left him near the warrior's terrace by the path leading to our refuge. Edric grimaced. To be frank, archdruid, I think he hoped you might do as you suggest. He knows time is short. Then lead me. As Edric obeyed, Malfurion saw how the presence of this one human distracted the night elves in the vicinity, almost as much as their concern over their aging did. Despite the fact that humans and other members of the Alliance had had access to Darnassus since its founding, it was clear that Edric was recognized as one of Gen's aides and thus also recognized for what else he was. For his part, the young human kept his gaze straight ahead, almost as if nothing else existed but the path. Malfurion knew that the truth was just the opposite. Edric was as uncomfortable as the citizens of Darnassus, if not more so. Edric moved as silently as any night elf. No mean feat for a human. He said nothing as they exited the city, but Malfurion noted that he finally relaxed as they entered the forest. The archdruid found it fascinating that a human would be more relieved to be in the wilderness than in a city. As ever, the trees welcomed the night elf's presence. Branches gently swayed against the wind, and leaves rattled. To Edric it was not noticeable. To Malfurion it was a pleasure. He made a gesture that he knew the trees would sense, acknowledging their greetings. Then the welcome gave way to something else. In the language of the trees, Malfurion heard, "He waits. He waits behind Three Knob Growth. All trees had names. Most were incomprehensible to even the Archdruid. What the Night Elf heard was an approximate definition of what those names meant. Tree names were almost always physical descriptions of their characteristics, and no two trees, to his knowledge, had the same one. Malfurion knew Three Knob Growth, one of the first to rise in this part of the forest, so the tree had proudly informed him upon their first encounter some weeks earlier. He turned toward it, just as Gen Greymane stepped out.
"Hail, King of Gilneas," the Archdruid solemnly declared.
"Gilneas," murmured the brawny, dour figure.
Gen Greymane resembled a bear, albeit an aging one. No handsome man, he yet had a commanding presence and eyes still sharp and quick for a human of his more mature age. Unlike the Night Elf, Gen sported a much shorter clipped beard. He stood taller than Edric, which brought him slightly nearer to the Night Elf in stature.
"Gilneas," the king repeated. "In name only, Archdruid."
"For now," Edric piped up.
"We shall see."
Glancing at the other human, Gen added, "And why is the Archdruid here? I asked you to see about an audience with him, not drag him to me." Malfurion interjected before the misunderstanding could grow out of proportion.
"I told your man to take me to you, Gen.
Your request coincided with my need to talk with you. Following Edric back saved valuable time."
"It's about the summit, Archdruid."
"Of course. Gilneas is one of the most prominent reasons I sought to bring it to fruition. Your people's admission to the Alliance is..."
"Readmission, you mean?" the king growled with much bitterness. "After I was foolish enough to think that Gilneas was best served taking matters into its own hands."
"Gen, the curse was something beyond your control. You could not have—"
"It doesn't matter," the Lord of Gilneas growled, for the moment sounding more like an animal than a man.
He leaned into the Archdruid, and although Malfurion was still taller, to the Night Elf it seemed that their gazes met evenly. Gen seemed bigger, wilder.
"It doesn't matter. We are and will always be cursed."
Malfurion fought to take command of the conversation again.
"We wanted to speak to one another about the gathering.
The first emissaries will be arriving tomorrow." Gen deflated.
"Yes. The summit.
They'll all have their chance to judge me for my foolish mistakes." "I have been in contact with several of them. They understand the necessities of the time. They understand that you regret all that happened. They also can appreciate what you and your people can offer."
"And do they understand it's a double-edged sword they are offered, Archdruid?"
The Night Elf extended a comforting hand to the human's shoulder. Gen accepted it without question.
"You have gained far better control of it than you think. You offer nothing but advantage, Gen.
At the very least, they will have to seriously consider that aspect."
"Even Stormwind?"
"I have no answer there," Malfurion admitted. "But I have great hope." The Archdruid leaned closer.
"He is coming. That was what I especially wanted to tell you."
"Stormwind is coming?" blurted Edric. "My lord, that means—"
"Exactly nothing," the King of Gilneas responded at first.
Still his eyes shone with hope of his own.
"No. Perhaps it means much. If he and I can set aside our differences. I know that I'm more than willing."
"Varian Rin is a wise man," the Archdruid pointed out. "Stormwind would not be what it is if he were not." Gen finally could not help smiling at the news.
"As you say."
This lightens my heart. There is a chance, after all. If he's coming, he must be willing to let bygones be bygones. Malfurion pulled back. I need to return to dealing with the summit. I merely wanted to assure you that there is every reason to believe that Gilneas will be accepted into the Alliance. I want your promise that you will attend as previously stated, and be willing to show your humility as well as your strength. I'll be doing my part. Don't you doubt it, Archdruid. Gen offered his hand, which Malfurion shook. There's my promise again on all we agreed to. If there's any hope of seeing our home again, it's to get through this summit. And I promise again to see that everyone understands the import of this. Even Stormwind. Gen Greymane signaled to Edric, who slipped into the forest. The Lord of Gilneas gave Malfurion one last grateful nod. I know you'll do all you can. It wouldn't have gotten this far without you, Archdruid. Gen gritted his teeth. But from here on, you know it all lies in one man's hands. He will come to see things as they must be for all our sakes. I believe that. But let us pray to your Elun just the same. I'll take all the help we can get. With that, the king slipped into the forest. The Archdruid stood there, momentarily caught up in his thoughts, his gaze fixed on the area into which Gen and Edric had departed. A large, dark shape momentarily arose among the underbrush, then disappeared among the trees again. It was tall enough to be a man, but was not. The sight, though expected, still jarred the Night Elf slightly. As he turned, he again silently swore to do everything he could to help the refugees from Gilneas, including ensure that they were welcomed back into the Alliance by everyone. After all, they might never even have been cursed if not for Malfurion. Chapter 7 Into the Forest. Haldrissa expected no word yet from Darnassus, but that did not mean that she remained idle in the meantime. She did not trust that the orcs were not already on the move. Thus it was that the very next day she had led another party out to investigate an area near the foothills east of the Night Elven Camp Maestra's Post. With her was Zanon, chosen for his sharp eyes. Danaea had been left in command back at the fort, not something Haldrissa's second had been happy about. As senior most officer, it would behoove you to remain behind, Danaea had even suggested in her most courteous manner. Just in case of trouble in the wilderness. Her point had had merit, but at the time Haldrissa had not been able to get past the thought that perhaps Danaea had believed herself more capable of facing the rigors of the journey and any encounters during it. Haldrissa had declined the officer's suggestion without hesitation. However, now, some time into the ride, the twinges Haldrissa felt made her occasionally wonder if she should have listened more. But all thought of that vanished as Zanon returned with two other sentinels from scouting the territory up ahead. Haldrissa had purposely chosen an obscure area less likely to be of interest to the Horde for the very reason that the enemy might have played on that reasoning. The commander had survived so long by learning to try to think like the enemy, however repulsive that might be to her at times. She had to do her best to expect the unexpected. Of course, both Danaea and Zanon had looked dubious when first informed where she intended to lead the party. However, Zanon did not look so dubious now. In fact, his concerned expression made everyone who had been waiting, especially Haldrissa, sit straight and taut. "What is it?" she asked the moment he was near. "Best see," he gasped, still exerted from the swift ride back. "This way!"
One brow raised at this curious reply, the commander waved the party to follow Xanon. The trained nightsabers leapt effortlessly and silently through the forest, dodging around trees and across uneven terrain with an agility that Haldrissa still admired after all these millennia. Each cat was in the prime of its life. For the first time the commander considered her previous mounts and the ends of their turbulent lives. While some nightsabers